Frank had met with a guy, and he met him at Disney World. And the guy's CIA. And they basically said, we know about your plans for Tajikistan. Putin comes in. He's going to have the Black Hawks level the entire city. You've got a couple dozen guys protecting the president, and you've got 200 of Frank's guys going in there. They're going to take the White House fairly quickly. Bush says to him, because I like your style. Which I always thought was hilarious. Could you imagine George Bush? I like your style. Like, I like the fact that you're taking over this, trying to take over these countries. There's a lot of big things happening at this point. There's a lot of big players. Hey, this is Matt Cox, and we are talking about the Frank Amadeo story. It's insanity. Not sure. I think this might be, we might be on nine, like tape nine or video nine. We're not sure. But regardless, where we last left off was 32 of Frank's special forces, including the two guys that are running the operation in the Congo, have been captured, and they are being held at a military base by General Bemba and his troops of, you know, tens of thousands of men, of soldiers. So they're being held and they're being interrogated, and there's 32 of them. Two of those guys are Billings and Robinson. So Robinson is, I think, in charge of, he's one of the guys that's in charge of the campaign as well. Well, he was also on the SWAT team in Orlando. And then Billings was a head of George H. Bush's security detail. He's a retired Secret Service, and he's in charge of tactical. So now that we've caught back up, Amadeo, of course, is still in Orlando because, I mean, he's not going to, you know, he didn't go to the Congo. He sends people to the Congo. So, like, yeah, like, you're not sending me. I'm not going. You guys go take care of this. So they end up getting grabbed. So they're in the military prison there or jail, and they're being interrogated. And of course, I've seen there's a documentary on all this. It's called 9 Days in the Congo. It's on the channel. So the interview with Billings during that documentary, Billings talks about how they continually would drag them out and they would be interrogated. And the big problem with Billings was that he still had his Secret Service credentials. And if you're somebody who was raised in the Congo, in the, you know, and you're a military interrogator, you know, to them, they felt like he was CIA. They felt like this was a CIA-backed coup. Like I said in the earlier video, I believe that, you know, Frank has always maintained that nobody was armed, when in fact the newspapers and even Billings and Robinson said that these guys had weapons on them. But it wasn't a military coup. They were backing a political candidate. They got grabbed, and they got grabbed because their candidate had gone from ranking of like 30 down to number 3 in the polls, and was, and they still had months away. They were still months before the election, and most likely he was going to win the election. At this point, all of that is being put to the side. At this point, he's hired a black ops group to come in and rescue them. And he's negotiating with them, and they have, you know, Black Hawk helicopters, they've got machine guns or whatever, they've got, you know, military armaments. And I interviewed a guy by the name of Andrew Bustamante for the book, It's Insanity. And he was telling me that there are several of these types of groups in Africa that basically practice or operate in Africa. And most of them are former, so they're Nigerians, guys from Chad, Nigeria, but most of them are from South Africa Special Forces. You know, for the right price, they'll come in and they'll rescue someone or try and find a hostage or rescue the hostages. And that's what Frank was in the middle of doing. In the meantime, he'd contacted everybody, the Catholic Church, everybody. And so while this is going on, they're all trying to get in to see these guys. And while that's happening, Billings and Robinson are being pulled out of their cell a couple times a day, brought into a room and interrogated. And, you know, Billings admitted that, he said, you know, they were screaming and hollering and yelling at them and spitting at them and being extremely intimidating, but they weren't really beating them. However, the other guys that were being held, the other mercenaries or the other members of tactical who were African, were not being treated that well. Billings goes into how they were, they would slap these guys around, they would, you know, punch them, they would threaten them, they would choke them, they would grab them by the hair, they would, you know, really were being brutal. Brutal to the point where they weren't really trying to leave bruises and bruise them up. But they were, it was bad. Well, one of the things that they did to try and cheer themselves up, I remember, Frank had told me that they started singing and started teaching the other group members theme songs to old, like 1950s, 60s, and 70s TV shows. And I have them written down. It was like the theme song to the Beverly Hills Hillbillies, the Brady Bunch, Rawhide, Gilligan's Island. Periodically, they're pulling them out of their cell, and they would drive them into a clearing, and they would have a kind of a makeshift execution. They would all line them up, put guns to their heads, and act, and they would bring they'd have the media come and act like they were about to execute all these foreigners, you know, and all these guys for trying to, you know, take over the government. But they do it a few times, according to Frank and Billings. They had done this a few times, but they never pull the triggers. They never end up, you know, executing anybody. It's just a scare tactic. But granted, Billings said it terrified him. They said, you know, he kept thinking he was never going to see his daughter again, never going to see his wife again. It's, you really ought to watch the 9 Days in a Congo. And it, like I said, it's on the channel. So what ends up happening is, eventually, Frank ends up getting a hold of someone from the State Department. Frank is saying, look, I can hire this black ops team. They can come in. They can do this. And they're telling him that they have people on the ground. They've got, you know, which we're assuming, talking to Bustamante, I'm assuming that those guys were, that the CIA was basically outside monitoring the situation, but that doesn't mean anything. Like, Frank's actually got guys that can go in. And he's telling the State Department, look, we can go in. And they're telling him, we're negotiating right now, we're trying to get these guys released. And ultimately, Frank ends up saying, at one point, he starts screaming that if they're not released in something like the next 48 hours, or if they pull them out to go do one more mock execution, he's going to have the Black Hawks level the entire city. I don't think that's possible. But if you knew Frank and how animated he gets and how outrageous, he's like, I will have my troops or something. I forget. I remember he told me exactly what he said. It was hilarious. But it's basically like, I will have my troops level the entire city. And, you know, which is ridiculous, but I don't know. I don't know if the Blackhawks have missiles. I don't think they can level a whole city. I'm not sure how much of a city, there really is in the Congo. The point is, they were going to go in and try and grab these guys. And so just about the time this whole thing is unraveling, they end up packing all these guys into, you know, troop transports. They drive them to the airport. They load them onto planes and they get them out of the area. Frank, of course, is thinking they're going to have to go in because he thinks they may be driving them to the staging area where they would execute them, but they don't. They actually go in the opposite direction towards the airport. And the State Department is telling him at the same time, we've worked something out. We've got it. We're getting them released. And they do. They end up getting released, which is great. Let's jump back to me being in prison writing the book. As I'm interviewing Frank and I'm writing the book, I only say this because I always thought this was hilarious. So I don't know if anybody knows who Tom Arnold is. Tom Arnold was married to Roseanne Barr. He was a comedian. He was in the movie True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's kind of like his co-defendant. What am I saying, bro? He's like the co-actor or whatever, secondary actor. What do you call that?
His co-star.
Co-star. Thank you. His co-star. Tom Arnold was Arnold Schwarzenegger's co-star. Tom Arnold is notorious for being bipolar. He's always saying things he shouldn't say. He's always getting in trouble. Well, he was a comedian at this time. And I had a friend of mine named Danny Donovan. And Danny Donovan and his wife actually ran the, I want to say it was a comedy club in Atlanta, Georgia. So they knew Tom Arnold. I had written a synopsis of Frank's story. And I explained just the kind of bizarre character that he is in the story and how he would go off on these tangents and just his behavior in general. And I had sent it to Danny. So Danny at one point said that Tom Arnold, they would text and, you know, every, you know, whatever, 2-3 times a week. And he said, you know what? He said, I think I might know somebody that would be interested in this story. Danny had come to see me and said, he had read the story. He goes, man, that's a great story. You know, he stayed for 2-3 hours or 4 hours. And that's one of the many things we talked about. He said, man, I'm thinking about giving it this. I know a guy who's a comedian who's, you know, Tom Arnold. I'm thinking about sending it to him. So I was like, yeah, absolutely do that. Well, weeks later, I get an email from Danny and it says, call me immediately. So I call Danny, you know, you go wait in the line for the phones for 20 minutes. And I get on the phone, I call Danny and Danny says, hey, what's up? And I go, hey, what's going on? You told me to call you. Listen, he said, Tom Arnold loves it. He loves the synopsis. He read it. He said he wants to meet you. He said he would love to play Frank Amadeo. And Tom Arnold is too tall to play Frank Amadeo. But if you remove that, if you say, hey, I can deal with the fact that Frank's probably 5'4", 5'5", Tom Arnold's probably 5'10", whatever. Let's say that that's not a big deal. Although I love the fact that he's short and he's got a little Napoleon kind of thing going on. Remove that, you have to make sacrifices. So if you're willing to sacrifice that, Tom Arnold would be amazing as Frank Amadeo. He would do a great, great job. So I was thrilled. And, you know, at this point, like, I'm probably getting out of prison pretty soon. Like, at this point, I've got maybe a year or so. And so he's like, listen, he wants to talk to you. He wants to meet you when you get out, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'll fast forward and let you know that in the meantime, Tom Arnold had gotten a deal to do a series of documentaries, episodes, looking for what they called the pee-pee tapes. I don't know if you've ever heard this. Supposedly, this was being pushed by the liberal media that there were tapes out there of Donald Trump urinating on women, right? So this is something that like it's one of those things that somebody says and then the media takes off with it. And next thing you know, people think it's true. And it's as far as Tom Arnold's concerned, he thought it was true, but he's extremely liberal and he wants to believe that. And he actually got a deal to do a whole series of documentaries trying to find them. He ends up getting into an altercation with the director and gets into a fist fight with the guy and like punches him out and they drop the whole thing. And he basically gets blackballed. I remember I read an article talking about how he was refinancing his house for like getting like a third mortgage on his $5 million house in LA. And he was broke and desperate and probably going to claim bankruptcy. He was going under and his career wasn't going well. And then after that, he started sending out crazy tweets. And by the time I got out of prison, like, I don't know what was going on with that guy. Like, you know, we never even pursued it. And he had stopped talking to Danny too. Like he just kind of became like a hermit and couldn't get anything off the ground. And I don't know, maybe he's doing great now. I should probably make that call. But so I remember telling Pete that, and Pete and I, we were walking around the compound just laughing our asses off about how hilarious it would be if I got out of prison. Tom Arnold picked up the synopsis, turned it into some kind of a screenplay or a series and ended up being Frank Amadeo. And he would be perfect because all he really had to do was play himself, which is all Tom Arnold, I think, really does anyway. So back to the Congo. So what happens is they end up flying these guys out. They take Billings and Robinson and they fly them to Germany where they're checked out on some military base. And then they're flown back to the States in Frank's jet, right? Like there's footage of them landing. I want to say they land somewhere in Orlando and some private airport in Orlando, and Frank's there and he meets with them and hugs them when they get off the plane, and they drive Billings straight back to see his wife and his kids, and they're thrilled and everybody's thrilled. So that works out. And that's, you know, that's kind of the end of that ordeal. Kashala, who was the political candidate that Frank was backing, does not win. He is actually still a political figure in the Congo to this day. You can find him on YouTube, and he speaks out about the government, and I think he holds some kind of an office, which is very common in those types of, well, just in general. Sometimes you'll take your political adversaries and you'll put them in a position. So you're kind of like paying them to stay over there and be quiet. And so I think he holds some political position in the Congo now. And what happens, what that basically sparks, though, because you have to understand at this point, Frank's now national media kind of persona. The story gets picked up by Orlando, by some of these other, some of the national papers and stuff, and they start writing stories. And you can look on the internet to this day, there's stories about Frank and the Congo and the whole thing. Even though he was kind of trying to stay, you know, under the radar, at this point, it's too late. So at this point, Frank actually kind of comes out from behind the, out of the shadows, from behind the curtain, kind of like if you've ever seen The Wizard of Oz, like the great wizard, he steps out from behind the curtain. So he kind of comes out and he starts doing interviews. He does interviews with several newspapers, talks about his companies, talks about what the goal is, discusses his ultimate plan, although he trims it down considerably because he knows how crazy it sounds that he's, ultimately I intend to take over the world. And, he knows it sounds insane. So he kind of trims that down. Although there's articles where he's talking about that too, but that's later. Well, because people start to know who he is and they start to know, kind of what he's capable of, he starts to be approached by more and more political figures. He's donating more and more. He ends up backing NATO. He ends up getting involved in NATO. He ends up meeting with one of the guys in the Congo embassy, right? So he meets with one of these guys who's like a former general. He meets with one of those guys in Washington. Now, I have the dates and times and everything in the book. And he meets with him, and they have this discussion. And, they're still under the impression he was trying to take over the Congo through military means. They have a long discussion. And I want to say it was like the Army Navy Club or something where they had it. But the point is they have this long discussion, and he basically says that he's willing to back the president, the guy that ended up staying president. He was a current president and stayed president of the Congo. And he says he'll back him. He wants to, they're going to start discussions about getting a hold of the mineral rights and getting mining teams in there to start mining these massive rights. I think it was a cobalt. That's what they have the largest. It's the largest natural reserve or source of cobalt in the world is in the Congo. That's like the main one. They've got other ones. They've got, titanium and all these other types of metals that are in there. But I think it was cobalt that is they have the largest one. I think that's what they use in the cell phones or something. So he has this discussion. He's in discussions with them to come into the Congo, and they're willing to have these discussions and talk to him. The other thing that happens is he somehow or another gets involved with NATO, and he ends up being invited to the White House. And I have photographs of him with George W. Bush during a conference. It wasn't even a conference. It's like a meeting of NATO officials in the White House. And they meet in like the, it's like the Roosevelt room or something. Like I've got photographs of him. He's sitting like two people away from Bush. And he's having a discussion with Bush. And I remember he says at one point, he says that Bush mentions to him as the meeting's breaking up, Bush mentions to him that he says something about the Congo, and Frank says, well, it was a misunderstanding. You know, we were backing a political candidate. And Bush says to him, he goes, I like your style, which I always thought was hilarious. Could you imagine George Bush? I like your style. Like, I like the fact that you're taking over this, trying to take over these countries. So at the same time, he ends up meeting with a someone from the CIA. And they're discussing the Congo, and they discuss things that are happening in other countries. At some point during this whole process, Frank is approached by, well, let me back up. Okay. In 91, 92, 93, in the early 90s, when basically after the fall of the Soviet Union, a ton of Eastern European countries broke off from Russia. Well, you know, some of them were set up by, you know, their governments were set up and they were pro-Western and some weren't. Initially, Russia was going to be pro-Western, right? Capitalism, although it's probably one of the extremely capitalist now, but it's also run by basically the mob. But Putin comes in and he kind of quashes that, and these oligarchs take over. Well, periodically, the oligarchs get frustrated with Putin, and they say something. They say something Putin doesn't like. And what happens is Putin will come in, he'll fabricate some kind of a case against them, something the United States would never do. Wait till we get to that one. Anyway, so he comes in, his guys fabricate a case, and they say, hey, you know what? These guys aren't paying taxes. Like, you know, what kind of a case do you fabricate against a guy who's a CEO of a billion-dollar company? Like, it's hard to say that he's bringing in drugs or something, right? You have to come up with something like tax fraud. So they go in and they audit the books, and they say they accuse him of tax fraud, and then they charge him with tax fraud, and then they arrest him or they try and throw him in jail. And of course, really, it's just because the guy has an issue with Putin, or he said something Putin didn't like, or, you know, maybe he's trying to work too closely with the allies. And they're building a pipeline. And Putin comes in and says the guy, I believe he says he hits him for tax evasion. The guy flees the country and Putin seizes some of his pipelines, his natural gas pipelines and his companies. But they end up putting together this kind of consortium of guys that aren't necessarily in Russia. These are oligarchs that are in other countries. One of the things that they want to do is they want to build a pipeline that runs, it doesn't run through Russia. It actually would run through several of these countries that had broken off. One of them is Tajikistan. So Frank is actually in, he's in like a hotel meet at a meeting or something. And I forget exactly how this happens, but he ends up getting approached by someone who works for this consortium. And he approaches him and he talks to him a little bit. And it's actually a little convoluted how it ends up happening, because this guy kind of hands Frank off to somebody else. That guy comes in, they meet in like a hotel, and in the hotel, they talk to Frank. And what the reason they're zeroing in on Frank is because he's been in the national media. He just had a bunch of guys arrested, and he's trying to take over countries, and he owns a private security firm. So they're thinking, hey, this guy has the means and the ability to possibly take over a country. Now, a bunch of oligarchs don't have that. As much money as they have, it would be difficult, and it would lead back to them. So what they do is they go to Frank and they say, look, they send one of their guys to Frank and they say, look, this is what we want. They actually already have paid off and have contacts within the Tajikistan military that has agreed to not put up a fight if there was a military coup that was pro-Western. So they're saying, look, you go in, if you were to send a force in, you could go in, all you have to do is take the, it's basically like taking the White House. You send in a couple hundred guys to go onto the White House, fight it out with the president of Tajikistan's security forces, take over the White House, get a hold of the president, announce that you've seized control, and we'll back you. We arrest the president, and you put in, and there's another guy that was pro-Western, another candidate for the presidency, which was never going to be able to, was never going to take control by himself. You put him in power, and we'll give you whatever you want. Like we'll run the country, that we'll run the economy the way you want. We'll back you 100%. The military will back you, but we need your guys to go in and seize control. But we won't put up a fight. And they're going to make it look like they're kind of putting up a fight, a little bit of a fight, maybe. But in the end, you've got a couple dozen guys protecting the president, and you've got 200 of Frank's guys going in there. They're going to take the White House fairly quickly. They're going to get a hold of the president. They're going to end up declaring that they've seized control of the country. And the military is has already agreed not to stop them. So this is supposedly the agreement they come up with. What's interesting about that is that Frank has ended up coming up with a similar type of situation with a group in the Congo. And I remember he had told me that he went to one of the countries. Here's the fear of doing something like that in Africa, that your neighbors see this unrest, and they see you taking control of an African country or a country in general, and that gives them the opportunity to invade your country. Like, they know it's unstable. They know that you're not necessarily really in control, that it's in upheaval, and they say, oh my gosh, let's go in. And then they go in, they've got their shit together, they take over. So in this instance, I remember Frank had met with a guy, and he met him at Disney World. What's so funny about that is I thought this guy is office rocker when he's telling me this. But when I talked to Andrew Bustamante, and I said, this is what he told me. I said, how crazy is this? And I explained this to Andrew. Andrew says, it's actually perfect. Because I was thinking, why would you meet in a public place? And Andrew said, you meet in a public place if you don't trust the person. Because that way, you know you're safe. You know that they're being screened coming in. They don't have a weapon. You don't have a weapon. You have the ability to kind of control the environment. And they won't do anything in that type of environment, because Disney has tons of security. And in my mind, I remember hearing It's a Small World playing in the background as they're talking about world domination. No, as they're talking about taking over the Congo. And he ends up talking to one of the neighbor countries, and he has a discussion with a general, or a former general, who gives Frank the green light to seize control of the Congo should it come to that. So there's a lot of big things happening at this point. There's a lot of big players in this whole new world that Frank has dipped into as a result of a failed coup, political coup in the Congo. I mean, it was a failure, and yet people are coming out of the woodwork to talk to him and work with him, even though it was a failure, which is strange. But once again, Bustamante was like, yeah, but now you know somebody, that this is a guy who's along the same thought process as your organization and has the means to do it. So he said, I can see that happening, and I can see meeting in a public place like that. Well, that ends up happening. And when that happens, at the same time, while this is going on, Frank starts putting a lot of money into NATO, and starts getting contacts in NATO. He ends up hiring, what was the name? This was a woman who was, I want to say it was Bill Clinton's, she was an advisor to Bill Clinton, and she and her company, she'd gone out and she'd started a consulting firm or a lobbyist firm. And Frank hired her as a lobbyist. So Frank ends up putting up several million dollars, whatever, $5, $10 million of the government's money to back the a NATO summit in Latvia, Riga. Now, there's probably 20 or 30 large contributors to that put up money to back these types of things. And Frank ends up, I want to say it's Acme, under the name of Acme or whatever. The point is it's basically Mirabilis. So I'm kind of consolidating all these different companies under Mirabilis. So Mirabilis ends up putting up this money. And it's funny too, because when you can look at if you go and look at the Latvia Riga summit, NATO summit, you can actually see the logo for, it's actually like, he's got like 30 logos. His logo is up there. Anyway, Frank ends up going to Latvia and has multiple discussions with NATO members. And it comes up numerous times about what Frank's plans are for NATO. While he's in NATO, I'm going to get to that in the next tape. But while he's there, though, now keep in mind, Frank feels like all of these things that are happening are very covert. Nobody knows about it. Nobody knows what's happening. But while they're there, Frank and his organization, he ends up, somebody ends up entering an elevator when Frank's in the elevator, and they bring him up past his floor to another floor. And they basically tell Frank, you know, we need to have a discussion. And the guy's CIA, they bring him into a room. Frank has a discussion with a CIA member, which to this day, he's like, I have no idea who it was, but it was clearly CIA. And they basically said, we know about your plans for Tajikistan. Now, Frank, of course, is like, I have no idea how they know this. But they know about the plans, and they tell them that the political environment isn't right for a takeover of Tajikistan. And Frank doesn't understand, because currently it's run by a friend of Vladimir Putin's, and they've got the whole thing locked down. They're running it like a dictatorship. And Frank says, I would think that the White House would want me. You ever think Washington would want me to do this? And they said, absolutely not. We've got other things that are in motion at this time. And keep in mind, Frank's got an entire plan. Frank's already got guys that are in, he's already got, you know, private security in Afghanistan that are protecting food convoys. And I think I mentioned that before. And, you know, they do things like they protect an embassy, or they protect like the green zone, or whatever they're protecting. They're just, you know, they don't want to pay for American soldiers, and then they just hire these other companies, you know. And so he already has troops there. In fact, he's actually moved them close to the Tajikistan border. So the plan is, you're going to drive straight through the Tajikistan border, which is going to be open. They're going to make sure it's open for you. So you're going to drive in a couple hundred troops. The capital's only a few hundred miles, so you drive for about 4 or 5 hours, boom, you hit the capital in the middle of the night, you seize control, the military backs you, you put this other guy in power, now you're one of the boys. You're one of the guys that took over the country, you're running the country. But the CIA doesn't want this to happen. And they tell him that. He doesn't say anything one way or the other, but they know he's mounting troops. What do you do? So I'm going to get into the whole thing with NATO. And basically, you have to think, at this point with Frank, he's been stockpiling some money. I don't know if I got into the planes, but I'll tell you about the planes. I remember when I think I did talk about the planes, right? I talked about, several people that I interviewed admitted that he was negotiating to buy these planes. So the guy's got, he's talking about buying planes. He's talking about taking over this Eastern European country. He's mounting troops on the border. And now that doesn't happen. But we're going to get into what happens with NATO. He's got the money to do it. He's got the troops to do it. doesn't happen. He ends up going to NATO and speaking at the NATO summit. And I'm going to get into that and how that goes wrong for Frank and leads to his ultimate demise. Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys watching. Please do me a favor. Consider joining my Patreon. Please check out the other videos on this subject or any of the videos on the channel. Please consider buying the book. It's Insanity. It's a great read. It's a way better read than me explaining it. It's also, I got it in a hard copy. I've got it in electronic form on Kindle, and I've got it on, it's also on Audible, and it's narrated great, and I really appreciate you guys watching. So check out the next video. See ya.